So I know it's unusual to start with elements practice, and really bringing our mindfulness to the elemental nature of the body. I've been wanting to, starting with the elements practice, I just wanted to turn our heart and mind toward what we'll be exploring tonight. The first establishment of mindfulness. The body. But before we do that, I want to talk to you about a dream that I had last summer during the protests for Black Lives Matter. And in this dream, my aunt had called me over the phone. And you all know that, or most of you know that, my aunt meant a lot to me. She was like, she was one of my moms. And she died like 3 years ago. So she's now an ancestor, right? So to have my auntie, an ancestor, visit me in a dream during a time of racial upheaval and truth-telling was pretty significant. And in the dream, my auntie was talking to me over the phone. And I just asked her, where are you, Auntie B? And she said, I'm in Indian Valley. And in the dream, I didn't know where that was. So I asked her, how do I get there? Because I want to come and get you. And then she said, and I could really hear the concern in her voice. She said, don't come get me. You'll get caught in traffic. You'll get stuck in traffic. And that was the end of the transmission. And she was reminding me of the Buddhist teaching on the Satipatthana. I know that may not sound obvious from what I just described, but all of my different associations with this, with the Satipatthana practice, she was pointing me to this teaching. And later on, we'll explore the Satipatthana. But for now, I just want to return to this dream and its connection to Satipatthana. I think it's such a trip that, like, even in dreams, even in sleep, we're in the process of making meaning and playing with meaning. And Auntie B said that she was in a valley. She was in Indian Valley. And valleys are associated with death, darkness, and times of difficulty. And we've been living in times of collective difficulty, global pandemic, and now these multiple variants that are not only all over the globe, also here in the United States. There's a reading that there are 7 different ones that have evolved independently of each other and seem to be sharing the same mutation. A social reckoning that we're all going through. It has some growing pains in it around gender expression, and gender roles, and political fallout. And again, this is just my opinion. This waking up to systems of harm, the political dysfunction, to me, feels like it's a result of just the unskillful actions of our ancestors. And our ancestors have done a lot of good. They passed along a lot of wisdom and resilience, or else we wouldn't be here, or else we wouldn't be able to, like, recognize truth and goodness and start to resonate with that and align ourselves with it. So there's a lot of goodness that we've inherited from our ancestors. And they've also passed along unskillful actions, unskillful attitudes. And this is just an acknowledgement of the fact that the human heart, it's a source of great, great good. And that skillful actions that can come out of that goodness. And the human heart is also a source of a lot of pain and destruction and a lack of skillful actions that come out of harm and destruction. And this time that we're living in can collectively feel like we're walking through a valley of real difficulty and real challenge. The valley is associated with challenge, difficulty, darkness, death. The valleys are also associated with health, with fertility and abundance. You think of the Euphrates and the Nile Valley and the Fertile Crescent, which is considered like these birthplaces of our civilization, our earliest civilizations. So valleys, places of difficulty and challenge, places of abundance and potential. And Auntie B was in Indian Valley. Now the word Indian has a lot of complex associations with it. In the dream, the word was pointing to two things for me. It was this play on Indian, native, native valley, native land, ancestral land. There's a phrase in the suttas, ancestral domain. And the other layer of meaning, the second one, was how this play on this native land, ancestral land, ancestral domain, was pointing to the Buddhist teaching on the Satipatthana. So we've talked about this before, I think maybe a month ago, perhaps earlier, I'm not sure. In the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha reminds us as practitioners to actually see the Satipatthana as our ancestral domain, as our ancestral land, as our ancestral home. He says, move in your own resort, in your own ancestral domain. Mara will not gain access to those who move in their own resort, in their own ancestral domain. Mara is this personification of greed, aversion, and delusion in our own heart and mind. That's one way of looking at Mara. I read a really interesting article by Venerable Analia where he was talking about Mara visiting the Buddha and awakened beings. And the question is, well, were they truly awakened if Mara is visiting them? Is it saying that he was still, that greed, aversion, and delusion was still operating in the hearts of people who were supposedly fully awakened? What was interesting, Venerable Analio's particular take on this, was that Mara visiting the Buddha, visiting beings who were fully awakened, his disciples, lay and monastic, was an illustration of how a free heart and mind interacts with the external external manifestation of greed, aversion, and delusion. So that's another way of actually viewing Mara's presence in the suttas, seeing as an external occurrence, and how a free heart and mind actually interacts with that. And then also one approach is to recognize the greed, aversion, and delusion in our own heart and minds. So again, from the Buddha, move in your own resort, in your own ancestral domain. Mara will not gain access to those who move in their own resort, in their own ancestral domain. He says Mara will not get a hold on them, i.e. the greed, aversion, and delusion will not invade our hearts, our intentions, our words, our actions, our views. Right? And the Buddha goes on to say, and what is a practitioner's ancestral domain? It is the four establishments of mindfulness. these four establishments of mindfulness, the four satipatthanas. And one way of relating to the four satipatthanas, these four establishments of mindfulness, the body, feeling tone, mind, and dhammas, one way of relating to them is we're actually engaging in these practices to help summons, develop, and strengthen mindfulness. They help bring mindfulness to full maturity. But not only are the four satipatthanas about establishing mindfulness, of bringing mindfulness to its full maturity, that in the process, we're actually using mindfulness to come to some understanding about the nature of the body, first establishment, the nature of vedana, this pleasant, unpleasant, neutral experience in our heart mind. Bringing mindfulness to actually help us understand the nature of the heart mind and dhammas, which we'll talk about in a moment. Yeah, it's fascinating that the Buddha is saying that these four areas of our experience, body, vedana, mind, and dhammas, that they're our ancestral domain, that they're our native land, not our cell phones, not the news, not I got what I wanted or I didn't get what I wanted, the four satipatthanas as our ancestral domain. And this fourth establishment of dhammas, what do we mean by this? We start to look at our experience in a particular way. And one approach to the fourth establishment of mindfulness, of the Four Noble Truths, the five aggregates, the five hindrances, the six sense gates, and the seven awakening factors. Starting to relate to our experience and see what actually leads to freedom, what leads to awakening, and what does not. What takes us away and what moves us toward suffering and getting entangled in craving. This fourth establishment is a way of relating to our experience and seeing it through this lens of what leads to freedom and what leads away from freedom. And the Buddha reminds us that straying from our ancestral land is to be seen by Mara, to get caught up in greed, aversion, and delusion. As my auntie said, you're going to get stuck in traffic. Don't come and get me. Stay in your own ancestral domain, Don Nicole. So likening the four satipatthanas, body, feeling tone, a heart mind, these different aspects of our experience that we're seeing through the lens of what actually leads to awakening, to see it as these areas as our ancestral domain is so evocative. If we just rest aware with this faculty, through the faculty of mindfulness, getting to know the nature of each satipatthana, we're starting to truly take in the lessons of the body and feelings and the heart, mind, and dhammas. And through that process, we come into our ancestral inheritance, which is freedom. Freedom from the misperceptions that arise from the activity of craving, the activity of this interplay among greed, aversion, and delusion. And this inheritance that we come into is set out clearly and really beautifully at the beginning of the Satipatthana Sutta. He says this, the four Satipatthanas, is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for acquiring the true method for the realization of nibbana. This is our inheritance. by resting in the ancestral domain, through mindfulness, learning about the true nature of the body, the true nature of feelings, true nature of the heart mind, true nature of this, the dhammas, we come into our inheritance of freedom, our ancestral inheritance. It's not outward, it's in. So tonight I'm really wanting to explore this first establishment of mindfulness, our first ancestral body, our ancestral home of the body that supports the disappearance of dukkha and discontent. The reason I'm wanting to focus on the ancestral domain of the body is that there's such a great deal of dukkha and discontent around our bodies these days. And just with COVID and the truth-telling that we're coming into around gender expression, race. In these things, the body is so central. Our attitudes towards our own bodies, the bodies of others, so central. COVID is revealing the vulnerability of the body. Every time that I hear that someone's getting a vaccine, I'm just so happy. And I know there's some pain involved, and especially the second dose. But it's like, oh, there's light at the end of the tunnel. And then these variants show up, right? Vulnerability of our bodies. And how much we depend on each other to get things done, to care for each other, provide services for each other, and the economic fallout around all of this. So much vulnerability that COVID is surfacing for us, literally impacting our capacity to breathe freely and with ease, which is so essential for life. Dukkha and discontent, the collective wounding around race. And to me, race is just a misperception, a misapprehension of the body and the meaning and significance of bodies. This first establishment of mindfulness helps us to start to deconstruct our misperceptions about the body. We've been acculturated to see skin color as symbolic of characteristics and capabilities, who gets and who don't get, as Walter Lee says in A Raisin in the Sun. We've created this hierarchy around race. Reading a book right now by Rhonda McGee called The Inner Work of Racial Justice. And her understanding of this is so nuanced. Really allows for a compassionate response while also standing firm in truth-telling, but not truth-telling to shame and blame, truth-telling that is life-giving and life-affirming and helps us to just name all the different ways that we've, all the lessons that we've learned around race. And these systems of harm that are based on color, it's maintained through inflicting violence on the body, injuring bodies, murdering bodies, incarcerating bodies, lynching bodies, all aimed at controlling black and brown bodies. And what gets me is that white bodies get caught up in this too. These systems of harm. So if we turn our attention to the first establishment of mindfulness and really allow mindfulness to rest in the ancestral land of the body, the native land of the body, wholeheartedly dedicating ourselves to the practice of the first establishment, we can start to get right with ourselves, as August Wilson says, a lovely playwright, starting to get right with ourselves, starting to heal the heart, heal the heart mind of its misperceptions. So there are six practices that are involved in this first establishment of mindfulness. And we're going to focus on three of the six. Anatomical parts, elements, and cemetery contemplations. And the others, the three other practices, mindfulness of postures, mindfulness of daily activities, and the body breathing. These are essential to Satipatthana practice. And they help us to root mindfulness in the body. They help us to establish mindfulness. But to me, these other three, anatomical parts, elements, cemetery contemplations, help us to see into the true nature of the body. So really wanting to focus on those three tonight. So we're encouraged to contemplate the body in a particular way. This is from the Samyutta Nikaya. Here one dwells contemplating the body in the body. In the Majjhima Nikaya, it talks about contemplating the body as a body. Here one dwells contemplating the body in the body. Here one dwells contemplating the body as a body. And I love this. Because we just rest in the ancestral land of the body as a body. Not our ideas about the body. Not our wishes for the body. Not the ways that we've been trained by our culture to relate to our own bodies and the bodies of others. Contemplating the body as a body and seeing into the nature of the body, anatomical parts, seeing that the body isn't inherently sexually attractive or unattractive. And as a result of that, having a balanced response to all bodies. And also not seeing the body as a vehicle for sense pleasure. We won't get into that tonight, but this practice of working with the anatomical parts helps us to let go of this habit of using the body as a way to just pursue things that are pleasant to the eye, to the ear, to the nose, to the tongue, and to the sensations of the body. You're really resting and turning our attention to the elements, the elemental nature of the body. And that helps us to see that the body is empty of a self, empty of some entity. And this is revealed through seeing the process, elemental nature of the body. And as a result, we can start to let go of creating an identity around these processes, these elemental processes of the body. And then the cemetery contemplation, we start to see into the body's mortality. That it's ultimately impermanent. And when it dies, it's going to return to the elements to help sustain new life. And it's also a reminder that our time here is really finite. And it can help us to get really clear about what our priorities are and what matters to us. How do we want to use our energy and our time, knowing that our time here is finite and we have this one precious life. So how are we going to use it? The cemetery contemplation can help us to get some clarity around how we're going to use our time and our energy, getting clear around our priorities in life. It's a very powerful, powerful contemplation. So wanting to start with the elements, because they're lovely. There's a real aliveness in connecting with them. So from the perspective of an awakened heart, all beings and all matter, all form, is just a process that consists of these four great elements that we allowed our heart mind to have a direct experience with through mindfulness, just scanning the awareness in the body. So rooting mindfulness in the body, and at the same time, having a direct experience of these four great elements of earth, water, fire, and wind. And each element actually represents qualities associated with earth, associated with wind and fire and water. Now, earth element, as we explored in the meditation, qualities of hardness. Feel it in the teeth, bones, softness, or resistance, pliancy, firmness, a sense of stability. Water element represents qualities of wetness and liquidity and cohesion. So when I'm scanning through the body, I don't necessarily feel the cohesive kind of that which binds water, that binds molecules and different parts of the body together. But we can actually feel the result of that, the result of that binding through the process of water, which is the connection. The connection between the head and neck and the upper chest and the shoulders. Connection between the fingers and the palm. That's the result of the water element. And sometimes it's just enough to know, even if you don't experience it directly, it's enough to know, like, you know, there's water element in this part of the body. Blood, synovial fluid. And the fire element represents qualities of warmth and coolness. And then the wind element, qualities of movement and motion, the breath in the body. And I want to read this from a lecture that Venerable gave on the elements. He said, this body, when I say Venerable, I mean Venerable Analia. He says, this body, earth, water, fire, wind, other bodies, nature outside, it's just elements. The difference between human beings, racial, gender, whatever, fall apart when we look at the elements. All of this kind of conceit, I'm so beautiful, so-and-so is ugly, I'm from this background, whatever it is, it's meaningless when we look at elements. Even that distinction, human, animals, plants, it's just elements, just different manifestations of the basic principles of earth, water, fire, and wind. And this is helpful insofar also because it shows us that emptiness is precisely not about getting disconnected, dissociating, or aloofness. Much rather, it is about seeing connections, interrelations. So it's not to say that our differences, that we need to ignore our differences. We can, our heart, mind, mindfulness has the capacity to actually hold simultaneously our differences while also feeling into and knowing directly our basic elemental nature. And that this doesn't negate the differences, but the differences are just slight variations on the basic theme of earth, water, fire, and wind. And what he's saying is that the body is empty of a self. And this is revealed by bringing mindfulness, bringing awareness to the four elements in their process nature. And that these elements, by resting our awareness in the elements, we start to feel and recognize our connection with each other and nature. So I've been thinking about this sense of self that arises and trying my best to be mindful, just bringing mindfulness to the activity of this construction of a self. It can happen so quickly. I just don't see it. But in those moments when the sense of self is really strong, it's really present, I can actually feel the construction of the sense of self in the body. And to actually feel that sense of self while also connecting to the elemental nature of the body helps to deconstruct this kind of sense of self that gets built by the heart mind. You start to see that the body is an elemental process that's ungovernable. I was with a mentor / colleague, more mentor than colleague, but spending some time with the mentor / colleague. And he had just received the first shot first shot of the vaccination. It was really interesting to hear him say, like, this vaccine and the body is just such an illustration of not self. Here's the immune system, he was saying, that's learning from this vaccine how to protect itself. And it's a process that's totally exempt from my will. It's exempt from my intentions and from my preferences. I could actually wish for this vaccine not to work. And the vaccine and my immune system would just be working independently of my intentions and my preferences and my wishes. The body is this biological process that's ungovernable. And I love this word ungovernable because it really captures the ways that we relate to the body. It's as if we relate to the body as if it's this territory that we can control so that all of our preferences and wishes can be realized and met. And we actually start to misperceive that the mental factor of volition, the mental factor of intention, and all that flows from it. I know in my own experience, I start to create a sense of self, construct a sense of self around the activity of intention, of volition, thinking that I can control outcomes, thinking that I can control this body. And this is from Venerable Inalio. He says, our volition, intention, operates within a wider network of causes and conditions. It can influence things, but it cannot completely control things. And this is from the Buddha. And in this passage, the Buddha uses the word form, or the Buddha that's come down to us through the ages. Rupa is translated as form. But for the purposes of this talk, I'm going to substitute form for body, because rupa includes the body, but it also includes all things that are composed of these four great elements of earth, water, fire, and wind. But practitioners, body is not self. Were the body self, then this body would not lead to affliction. and one could have of it, of the body, let my body be thus, let my body not be thus. Can you hear what the Buddha's saying? It's really simple and profound at the same time. If this body were self, if there was some entity at the center of this experience who could control the body's processes and responses, then this body would not age, it would not get injured, it would not die. We would be totally impervious to COVID if there was some self at the center of this bodily experience, because the self would intervene on the process of the illness that sets in with COVID and the dying process if the conditions for that arise. But the Buddha reminds us, and since the body is not self, it leads to affliction, and none could have of it, of the body, let my body be thus, let my body not be thus, let my body not be sick, let my body be young forever. If there was a self at the center of this process who could control the body, we do all kinds of things to avoid aging, illness, and death. But there's not. So this practice helps us to it answers the question, how do we want to live knowing that ultimately we are aging? The body gets injured, we will get sick, and eventually the body will die. It'll fall apart. So resting in the ancestral land of the body's elemental nature, its process nature, we start to see that it's empty. That's just a process. Just as my mentor was saying, like, wow. Like, there are things happening in my body as a result of this vaccine, my immune system is learning from, totally independent of my wishes and intentions. It's amazing. As Venerable Analio suggested earlier in the passage that I read to you, contemplating the elemental nature of the body helps us to see our interconnectedness, how interrelated we all are. The ancestral terrain of the body is a reminder that we're not separate from nature, that we actually are nature. So that we're reminded that, and again, this has been such a wonderful thing that Venerable has brought out through his study and his research and his own personal practice. We're reminded that with the support of nature, our bodies are allowed to live and thrive. Right? That without these four great elements, the body would fall apart and it would die. Our bodies are sustained by earth element in the form of food, even nourished by water in the form of beverage. It is cold out here, y'all. Like, so, so cold. I have never felt cold like this before in my life. It's cold out here on the East Coast. And yet, this body is sustained by the fire element in the form of, got a blanket here and the heat on, and I'm in this sweet little home in Putney, Vermont, in the form of shelter that's keeping me warm. And the body is sustained by the wind element in the form of oxygen, the body taking in oxygen, expelling carbon dioxide. So there's no entity at the center of this process keeping the body alive. It's nature supporting nature. And this to me is heartening, and it's a relief, right? It's just life coursing through the body. And I don't have to work all that hard to keep it running. I don't have to like bring my intention to the heart and keeping the heart beating and the lungs breathing. Like, it's a process that was set in motion when I was born, and it'll continue to be in motion until the conditions come together for my death. Excuse me. You get to relax into the elemental, biological process nature of body. Yes, we need to take care of the body. There are so many times where the elements have really come to my rescue. I remember sitting a retreat, a 2-month retreat. And I was really caught in a real strong sense of this constructing of a self. A lot of craving, a lot of aversion, a lot of aversion. I was doing walking meditation on the second floor at Spirit Rock of one of the, I think I was in Karuna. I'm doing walking meditation. I'm totally caught. A lot of restlessness, a lot of aversion. And this aversion was not light. It was pretty intense. And I was fully identified with the state. And the elements came to my rescue because it was storming outside. So it was March. You know how it rains in the Bay Area in March. I miss you guys. I miss the Bay Area. It's storming outside. It's raining. And I had been doing the elements practice during this retreat. And from the door, I could see the rain. I could see the wind. And I could see the creek and rushing by on the backside of the residential hall. And then I heard a voice. I didn't make this voice happen. It just, I didn't make the voice happen. I was like, okay, we're going to bring in the elements practice. This piece of wisdom rose out of a dedicated practice to the elements. And it just brought in a different perspective. And it pretty much like, I'm going to paraphrase, but it said like, you don't have to believe this. Just remember that you're a flux, you're a process, you're a part of nature, just like that creek rushing by. And these really painful mind states and this painful feeling of inadequacy, this sense of self arose due to causes and conditions. It's a construct, process. Just by connecting with nature, I was reminded of my own elemental process nature. And this rigid sense of self, this deficient sense of self started to relax a little bit. Then I turned around and there was a yogi. And this sense of self came like, it had started to relax, and then the sense of self started to brace again. I started to compare myself to this yogi. And again, it was unbidden. I did not, I had to summon this voice. It just said, she's a process too. And then I realized all of my projections onto her were, divesting her of her process nature in my own mind. And how often do we do that to each other? Divesting each other of humanity. Projecting our ideas onto each other over this process that we are. So now we're sharing the space. We're doing walking meditation. The sense of self is starting to relax. You know how Philip says, earth element, earth element, earth element. I'm doing walking meditation. And as I'm walking past her, I hear earth element, earth element, earth element. Like she's a process too. And the projection started to relax. Right? Really, element practice just reveals the inconstant influx, fluid nature of our being, this lack of governability. And we're reminded of our own connection to nature. And perhaps when we see ourselves in nature, we can start to care for each other and the body of the planet. And the elements practice can help us to start to restore the humanity, the people that we're connected to, right? That we share elements with. We share this basic elemental nature with, instead of projecting these things onto each other, starting to retract the projections and relating to them. We're just playing with this right now, looking at everyone here. You're aware of earth elements, water, fire, wind. Connecting to your own body, earth element, fire, water, wind. Two more practices that I was wanting to explore as our ancestral land, and how mindfulness helps us to know the nature of the body through the anatomical parts practice and the cemetery contemplations. We don't have time, so the next time we're together, I'll focus on those two. I'm just wanting to open it up to maybe a couple of questions before we bring to mind those beings that we're wanting to send metta to. Questions or reflections, your own experience with the elements practice. Maybe this talk did not make any sense at all, so you'd like some clarity.
I had some problems doing element practice, and I find it can be very useful as a way of deconstructing my experience. And instead of going into a thought pattern about my experience, if I break it down in terms of the elements, it's a way of avoiding that, avoiding at least habitual papancha mind, maybe substituting a different papancha for it.
Well, substitution, I mean, the Buddha did advocate five ways of working with distracting thoughts, that we bring in a more skillful. That's skillful. It's beautiful. Yeah.
But I find that I have a tendency to go towards the air element because I really like the vibrational quality of the breath.
Yeah.
I find very pleasant. Yeah. So I tend to skip all the other elements and only the air element. So I need to bring some more discipline to the practice.
You're right. There's something I also find, just in the body, my direct experience, the wind element, the air element, maybe it's because it's movement and I can feel it more directly than, say, water element. Yeah. Or yeah, right there.
Right. Because you're breathing. It's interesting. The breath is more interesting than a lot of the other stuff going on.
Yeah. I do love Earth, especially when the mind is pretty agitated and I'm feeling reactive. Just connecting with Earth element to kind of summons forth an equanimity. Yeah, that's been really helpful. Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Bita, then Mary.
When I'm sitting and when I'm concentrated, which isn't all the time, and I'm feeling body sensations, I think of that as the heat element.
Say more.
I've just realized, I guess I was going to ask the question, is that it just doesn't feel like the breathing. I don't know. So I guess it's more of a question.
Yeah.
What am I feeling?
You know, I don't know. But with the wind element, you can connect with wind element through the breath here, the belly or the chest. But it's the principle, it's the characteristic of motion, movement. So it's not just limited to the breath. So in this moment, Vita, actually we can all play with this. Just connecting to the body, connecting to your fingers, your palms, bringing mindfulness to, there's a, just like the slightest pulsing in my left hand. There's some tingling now that I'm noticing. And it's not rhythmic, it's arrhythmic. Vita, are you noticing any movements in the hand?
My movements are more in my arms, actually.
Okay. But then,
I always think of them as sensation.
Yes, it's sensation. You can think of it as sensation. The wind element manifesting as sensation in the body.
Well, that is the wind element. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question. Hi, Mary.
I really appreciated the your talk tonight on the elements. My experience has always been, it kind of been cerebral and intellectual for me, and I never really got the juice of it in a way. And I think what broke through tonight particularly was your example of the vaccine. Okay, that really helped me. Thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome. You're so welcome.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you. It was really lovely to hear. It was James Perez, and he was just like, yeah, just got the shot, and here's his body doing what it does. And I'm so happy that it's doing what it's doing. Yeah. Okay. Okay. One more question. Moo. Hello, dear. I'm going to unmute you.
Here we go.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Beautiful talk. Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I was born in a water sign. So I am really a water baby. And I go to the ocean and I feel like I've gone home. Mm. I go to the, wherever I go when there's water, I feel like I'm home. Mm. It's, I don't identify too strongly with earth nor air nor, but water is very much a part of my soul, I might say, my dad. But to integrate all of the different elements, as you were saying, I think I will think about that, because you can't have earth without water. You can't have air without earth. You can't have any of the rest, water without earth. So,
yeah. There's a really cool, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think that's really all I needed to say, but thank you again for bringing all that up.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The way you did.
You're welcome. There's a really cool meditation that Venerable Anālya leads, where you dissolve the elements from earth, water, fire, wind, and space.
Mm.
Very cool. And you start to see the relationship between those five elements, the fifth being space, and how they're dependent on each other. You can't have earth without space.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have temperature needs space and it needs motion. You know, molecules moving at different speeds. It was interesting to learn that really warm or boiling water, the molecules are moving at a really rapid pace. Whereas in ice, molecules aren't moving as fast. They're slower moving, but they're still moving. It's just neat to be able to kind of dissolve the elements in that way.
Okay.
Use our perception to connect with the elements in this way. Wait, thank you.